Satan. He'll deal you an awful hand. Don't play cards with Satan. He'll deal you an awful hand. Did I ever stop and tell you I am a desperate man? I thought I saw a bluebird sitting on a post. Thought I saw a bluebird sitting on a post. Shiver down my spine, I thought it was the Holy Ghost. I heard the word before, and I knew that it was good. I heard the word before, and I knew that it was good. Somebody ought to do like the good book should. I heard the voice of Satan crying in the woods. I heard the voice of Satan crying in the woods. I saw my own heart laying black with blood. Don't play cards with Satan. He'll deal you an awful hand. Don't play cards with Satan. He'll deal you an awful hand. Please believe me. Did I ever stop and tell you I am a desperate man, a desperate man? Take it.
CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Ink Stud Show, the radio show about Satan. That was Mr. Daniel Johnson, a lover of comics himself. If you've seen his art, he loves to draw Captain America and sing songs about Casper, because Casper is the friendliest ghost. My guest this week, I've got a bit of a double shot going. My first guest of the hour and a half that we'll be yakking is Noah Van Skyver. I got you there, Noah?
Yep, I'm here.
There we go. Okay. I'm like, oh, no.
I was really hoping that you were going to pronounce it right.
Did I get
it right?
Please
don't mess up.
Yeah, I'm a screw up. What can we say?
No, you did it. You should be proud of yourself.
My family reminds me every day of all my screw ups.
Oh, man, me too.
Damn you, family.
Yeah.
Mom, Dad, leave me alone. So I've got Noah here, and then once I'm done with him, or he's done with me. Depends who hangs up first. I'll be yakking with Todd Bach, T. Edward Bach, and I'm looking forward to that as well. I'm very happy that Noah came on the show. Very short notice. I emailed him about 2 days ago saying, dude, I need you to come on this week. And he said, okay. So how are you doing, Noah?
I'm okay.
Yeah. I'm sure it was more passionate, yes, than I made out. I guess we'll start out with who are you? Why should we care? No, tell me about, I guess your main thing is that you publish is Blammo. Four issues so far?
Yeah, 4 issues so far. And, like, I was going to do the 5th issue as, like, a, you know, like this, like, Abe Lincoln thing. You know, this whole, cause I'm doing this whole Abe Lincoln biography story right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of turned into its own thing. So now it's just, instead of Blammo, I'm going to be doing this, this story called The Hypo.
The Hypo.
Yeah, The Hypo. It's like one of Abe Lincoln's terms for his depression. That's where the name came from.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's like a. It's not really like a presidential story, though. You know, I'm not doing anything like past 1842. So it's just like a young adulthood story of Abe Lincoln.
What attracts you to Abe?
Well, it started because I had read this story, this short story on, I don't remember where, I think it was some website about him having a saber duel and with James Shields, and I was like, oh man, that's crazy, I should turn that into a comic story, you know. And then so I started doing research on him, and I was really attracted to him because he was like a, he's just like, you know, he was like a really interesting guy, but he had all these emotional problems, you know. And I can relate to that because I'm the same way.
Well, what, so, enlighten me, I'm a Canadian.
Yeah,
what were some of the demons he was dealing with?
Well, he just, I think he had manic depression, so, and he had this, like, thing where he was, you know, because it's going to be a love story about him and Mary Todd, and Mary had all these, like, political connections and stuff, and she was from, like, a really proper family, and he was, like, this poor, you know, like, just total, like, I mean, we probably think of him as, like, white trash, like, nowadays, you know, he was, like, nothing, and so he was just trying to get into politics, and so I think he was kind of trying to benefit from the relationship between her, but like it was like really rocky, you know, because he'd like break up with her and stuff and then get really depressed and write all these like really depressing letters, and then I don't know, he's just really messed up, you know.
And she was,
you'll see, I'll send it to you when I'm done.
She's the one he eventually married.
Yeah.
I heard stories that like one of the reasons like whoever went with him to the, was it Ford Theater, is because no one could stand her.
Yeah. Yeah, I think she was pretty hard to deal with.
So, tell me about your background in comics, your early days of loving comics or hating them.
They seem
like a demon for you, like you just, they're very compulsive and something you have to do.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just something, like, when I grew up in a really large Mormon family, and my dad, you know, we were, like, really strict, but for some reason, he was, like, really into comics, you know, so we had a big box of comics that he would read, like, every year, he'd go through and reread them, and it, like, all my brothers were like that, too, they were all, like, really into comics and stuff, and me, I was, like, the second to youngest, and I kind of wanted to fit in with those guys, so I started reading comics, too, but, like, you know, they would all read, like, Power Pack and, like, Spider-Man and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But like, my brother Micah, one of my older brothers, like, he like had some Ralph Snart comics for some reason, and I started like reading them. I had this like really vivid memory of me like underneath my bed in my home in New Jersey, like reading Ralph Snart, you know. And like, so I was just like really attracted to that, like really strange cartoony style, you know, like kind of grotesque. When all my other brothers were like really into the superheroes and that, so I just started drawing them in my notebooks and everything, you know, and I kept it up. But then when I was, like, probably, like, 18, I, like, you know, discovered, like, painters, and, like, fell in love with, like, Picasso and everything. And so I put comics on the back burner and started, like, trying to paint and stuff. And, like, you know, I took these paintings that I'd done to this library that was next to my house, and I was like, oh, can you guys hang these up here in your wall, you know? They had, like, this, like, whatever, like, 9 feet of wall space where they put like local artists' work. And they like looked at my paintings and were like, oh, I don't think so, you know? That was like really bad. So like I couldn't even get my paintings hung up in a library.
That's
so then I was
library.
At home, and then my brother Ethan called me, and I was like really depressed, you know, and he was like talking to me about his career. I think he had just won Artist of the Year in Wizard Magazine. And so he was like really excited and stuff, and he was telling me like, well, you used to do comics all the time, you should get back into that and everything. And I think the phone call came at like just the right time, you know. And so I just started doing them again. I had this American Splendor book, the anthology that came out after the movie. And there was a Crumb story in there. I think it was the Young Crumb story. And like I fell in love with that, you know. And that pretty much like lit the fire, and then started doing it since then. I don't know.
So the alternative stuff was stuff you got more into later.
Yeah, I was just more attracted to it. It's like a freedom thing, I think, you know. I mean, I can do whatever I want, and it's like a copy of a comic book that I did is like it's mine, you know. It's like I did every single thing in there, you know.
Well,
that's something. There's like something that's like really attractive about that compared to like, you know, just illustrating somebody else's writing, you know. I don't know.
It's your work. Yeah. No,
mine.
It's and no one else can take away from it. And that's really interesting that because your brother's very the complete opposite, where it's hyper stylized. And we won't get into that because we don't need sibling rivalry on the radio. Yeah. But interesting to see the differences instead of being similar, like the Kuberts or these Brazilian brothers, whatever their names were. I forget. And I couldn't really get into their stuff. So your latest thing is in the new MoM. And tell me about the Denver Spider-Man.
Tell you about him?
Yeah, tell me about the Denver Spider-Man.
Oh, okay. My friend owns a bookstore, and every once in a while he'll let me, you know, work there for like extra money and stuff. And I was there working, and I was looking at their Denver history section, and they had this book called The Seamy Side of Denver. And it was just about how when Denver was first built, it was like this like really, like that, you know, like a really crazy Wild West town. You know, like a lot of like shoot 'em up kind of stuff. I don't know. So they had like all sorts of brothels and everything. I was reading about that, and then there's a story later on in the book about this guy who they called the Denver Spider-Man, who had murdered this guy and lived in his crawl space, and nobody knew about it. And I was like, oh, the heck, you know. So I did a lot of research on that, because it's just like such a gross kind of creepy story, and I was looking for something like that to illustrate for the new issue of Blammo that I was working on. And after I did more research, I kind of like, it's another kind of thing where like you identify with it. I think that's one of the things that really pushes me over the edge of wanting to illustrate something, is like if I can identify with it in some aspects, you know. And it's not, you know, I wouldn't like kill anybody or anything, but he was just somebody who was picked on all his life.
Yeah.
And like just wanted a small space that was like his, you know. And he was like so small and stuff too, and he like found this space that like literally only he could live in. So it was like his. And I could kind of relate to that, because I'm the same way. I don't even leave my bedroom anymore, you know. I don't know. So then I illustrated it, and then everybody I showed it to liked it, and then, I don't know, it just got picked up. Thank God.
Mazel tov.
Yes.
Now, a big theme of your work is, I guess, being broke ass. And how has that put you as far as your own artisticness? Or is that even a really good question?
Wait, what was the question? I'm sorry.
Being broke. How does that push you in your artwork?
Man, it's more knowing that, you know, I work at this like really crappy bakery, and that every job I get is going to be the same as that. And if I don't do something about it, that's going to be my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what drives me. That's why I send out so many letters and stuff, because like, I don't want to be like that. I don't want to work 2 weeks for a $300 paycheck the rest of my life, you know. I'd like to accomplish something, so that's I mean, being broke is, that's just part of it. I don't know.
It's the cartoonist creed, almost.
What's that?
It's almost like a cartoonist creed.
Ah, man, I don't know what it, I really chose the wrong thing to get into. I should have been a paleontologist or something, you know, like my dad wanted me to be.
Too late now. You can be a scientist of comics.
Yeah, that's true.
There we go.
Like Chris Ware, that guy, I mean, I just started getting into his comics. And that guy, he's like way more than a comic artist, you know. It'd be cool to be like that.
It takes many, many, many years and devoted, nonstop reading, I think. That man is like a, you know, he's like a dictionary of comic knowledge, too, because he knows so much.
Oh, man. Yeah, like, did you see, he has like all these videos on YouTube. I was watching this like French documentary on him. It was amazing.
I haven't seen it. I can't
You're slacking, buddy.
You know, I can be honest. I am.
Yeah.
I am. I'm failing, you know. It's, what can I do? There's only so many comics to read and so much time.
Yeah.
But I love reading the comics. Now, did you ever actually have scurvy? Because I see it being mentioned in your comic.
No, I've never had scurvy.
Damn. I was all
it's
like
a funny thing to have, though, you know.
I read something in Vice about someone getting scurvy from like eating Kraft dinner every day forever, and they didn't know what was wrong with them, and like he went to the hospital and they couldn't figure it out, and turns out it was scurvy.
Oh man, were they yellow? Did they turn yellow?
I can't remember. It's been a while.
I don't know.
Probably discolored. Yeah. Maybe the color of the Kraft dinner.
Yeah. I just think that's like a really awful thing to have, you know. It's just like, but it's kind of funny too. It's like, you know, I thought pirates only got that, you know.
Well, it's like one of those things where you get where it's obviously like take no care of yourself, and it's just like, not a good thing to happen.
Yeah.
Now tell me,
I'm gonna eat Kraft all the time.
Now you're gonna see what it's like to get scurvy.
Yeah, let's do it, man. We'll do it together.
All right, I'll eat nothing but Kraft dinner for a month, and maybe I'll film it all. 30 days style.
Yeah.
Super cheese me.
Good.
I think it's at Blammo too, you got the little interviews and stuff. Is that something you just made up or something you tried to
do? Yeah, I really just wanted to talk to Joe Matt. And so I sent him some questions, like I was going to do an interview for my comic book, and he actually answered them, so I had to put them in there. But the good thing is, though, is that after I did that, that's when I sent that issue to Michael Dean at the Comics Journal. Then that's how I started doing the comic interviews in the Comics Journal. It's from that.
I didn't even know you... See, look at me. I'm not even researching properly. So, you do comic interviews in the Comics Journal.
Yeah, what have every been some... issue of the Comics Journal has a 3-page comic interview by me, the different comic artist. And this time, the newest issue has Peter Bagg.
Awesome. Tell me about some of the people you've been talking to and some interesting things you've gotten as far as replies and stuff.
I'm just finished drawing one with Kaz Strzepek, or Strzepek.
Strzepek? Yep.
And he talked about how when he was a kid, you know, Mad Magazine was like a porno mag to him. And that he used to do all sorts of things to that magazine.
Oh, Kaz.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Said Dave Berg. You really like Dave Berg's art?
Oh,
Mort Drucker.
No, Kaz.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
That's terrible.
I did one with Frank Stack. I was pretty excited about that. I really like Frank Stack a lot. He's great.
Now, did you do something in one of the mine shafts? I couldn't remember.
Yeah, I did. They published the strip that I did about being like a desperate cartoonist. And then... I think I don't know. I'm going to send them more stories, but I haven't done it yet. I've been too busy. But yeah, the Mineshaft guys are cool.
I got to say, it's one of my favorite little minis or zines to get in the mail. It's
one of the best things going on right now.
Yeah, it's
those,
like
those guys, they're hip cats, man. Plus, that guy who runs it used to live on the same street as I do right now in Denver.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so we talk about old, you know, what Denver probably looked like to him compared to what it looks like to me now with all its... You know, luxury lofts that are popping up everywhere.
Oh, yay, gentrification. How we love it.
I know, it's so great.
Yeah, well, we have it everywhere in Vancouver, so yeah. I understand any kind of disgust you may be feeling. My neighborhood is facing the worst of it. You hear that, Vancouver? I'm sick of it. I'm filled with spite and anger. Now, Bob Dylan, you have a soft spot for Bob.
Yeah, I love Bob Dylan. He saved me. Because when I was a teenage kid, it was like I was, you know, just a skateboarder, and everybody that I knew listened to like Limp Bizkit and that kind of stuff. You know, and that's cool, if you know, whatever. But then I heard Bob Dylan, I'd borrowed this album from my mom, and he like really like opened me up. I didn't even realize that, you know, he just opened up my musical, I don't know what the right word is for it. Like after, like, he was like the, you know how they say, like, if you smoke pot, it's like a gateway drug or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's what Bob Dylan was for me. Because once I started listening to Bob Dylan, I got into like everything else, you know. He opened up my mind. And so, like, now I can listen to all sorts, you know, there's like music you wouldn't even know about. It's like once you start talking to somebody about Bob Dylan, they're like, oh, yeah, you might like this too, you know. I don't know. I mean, do you like Bob Dylan?
I appreciate the early stuff.
You don't like the new zombie Dylan? Oh, he's a zombie now? Yeah, that guy, he did not age well.
No. I don't know. It's, Dylan never, I appreciate it. Stuff like Highway 61 and that kind of era. But it just didn't grab me the way it does a lot of other people, like yourself or my dad, you know.
Yeah. Well, I like early stuff too. I mean, my favorite of his stuff is always the earlier stuff, you know, when he was like just a young kid trying to make it in New York or something. But I think it's really funny to listen to that 80s stuff too. Everything he did that was like really terrible. It's like you listen to it kind of to make everybody else mad, you know, like to irritate your roommate. You listen to it.
That's why
I listen to, you know, the newer Dylan.
Just to see what happens for someone.
Yeah,
what
it takes to really break someone down. Too, you know? It's like a passive aggressive thing, you know. It's like he plays his video games really loud, and I'll turn up, I don't know, Infidels or something up really loud. Love and Theft. Didn't he have one called Under the Red Sky? I think so. That's like the worst one.
Yeah, I'll take your word for it.
Stay away from it. Okay.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, I'm a bit of a I'm a bit funny when it comes to music. Most people find my taste to be very odd and a little too annoying. So,
yeah.
I love German stuff from the 70s.
German. Oh, I was just about to say that, man. I was just about to say, what do you like? A bunch of German stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't believe you. That's awesome.
Like Kraftwerk and Neu and Faust. Yeah. Kahn, I should say. Whatever. It's all good stuff. Now, are you still Mormon? Because you did bring it up, the fact growing up.
No, I'm not. My family got divorced and they kind of broke apart and I was a part of the family. I was like, okay, so the family kind of split in two. You know, one half was Mormon and the other half fell away from that and I was part of the part that fell apart. I fell away from it. I don't know. It's a long story. I should do a comic about that.
There we go. Well, it's interesting because there are some Mormons in comics, but they're usually pretty quiet about it.
Yeah.
Like, we all know about Mike Elred. I mean, he put it up like a bolt of lightning. And I know James Owen is also Mormon because I made a Mormon joke at hit around.
Oh, didn't play?
Well, no, I think he laughed at
it. Man, Mormons wouldn't write comics like that.
No, they wouldn't. No. we get some up here in Vancouver, and it's always quite interesting. But I love all you Mormons that are listening. I'll not make any jokes, any disparaging comments. But I did love that TV show. What was it? I can't remember now. Now I'm all lost. I'm lost. Yeah. So
what was that show called? I can't remember anymore.
Oh, jeez.
You're talking about the one that's like, it was on like HBO or Showtime or something?
Yeah. The Chloe Sevigny. People are just wondering what the hell I'm talking about or why I'm talking about this. What does this have to do with comics? What has it got to do? So does it affect how you see things though? Like having that kind of early religious history in your life?
Yeah, I still have like a guilt thing, you know, like sometimes I'll feel bad about doing something just because, like, you know, I was like, when I was raised, I mean, I was born into it, so it's like in my subconscious, I can't escape it. So I always have like this guilt about things, you know, but I mean, I don't, we'll see. I hope God has a sense of humor.
Let's hope. If not, we're all fucked.
Yeah.
Now, one strip that bothers me, and it bothers a lot of people, I just can't get it, is the chicken strips.
chicken strips.
What the hell? What's the deal?
I have to do it, man. It's something I've been doing since I was a kid, and I just really, really enjoy drawing it. And me and my friend Brenton, his name was Brenton Gelfand, he was my childhood best friend, and, you know, it was like our thing. We were at kindergarten and stuff. We'd draw these stupid chickens and make these slick comics and everything. And then he committed suicide, so I do it sort of like as an ode to Brenton Gelfand, you know. And, yeah, I don't know. I mean, some people like it. Some people don't. I don't know what to say.
I get it.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. Maybe I don't know where it's going. Is it really supposed to
go
anywhere?
No, it doesn't go anywhere.
Maybe
it
whole...
It doesn't have an actual story. It's just a rambling thing. It just keeps going.
It's like the Johnny Ryan school.
Yeah, it just goes, man. I mean, I don't ever, like, for chicken strips, I just draw, like, a page at a time, you know? I don't think about where it's going. And it's just a part of Lamo, so...
It's
I get it all the time, man. Everybody's like, what's with this? I'll never stop. I don't care. Screw you guys.
Well, the comics are meant to for you to be expressing yourself artistically, and don't let anyone else tell you what to include in your books, let alone me. Because Lord knows I hate everything anyways.
Oh, no. I wish I would have known that.
No, actually, I really enjoyed the comics, and that's why I want to chat with you. One of the things I love the most is your feature of rejection letters.
They're all like form letters. Can you believe that?
Eric Reynolds isn't.
Oh, not Eric. Okay. I was thinking in Blammo, too, I published all these form letters that I got from like newspapers and stuff, and they're like all the same.
I love
they're, like, really impersonal and cold. Yeah, Eric Reynolds is. I really like his a lot. It's good.
No, he's always good for critical feedback. I think my favorite is Microcosm. They just really aren't interested in you.
They feel bad about rejecting me.
But they publish comics. But they say they don't.
Yeah, I think they just wanted me to go away. And I always send them stuff. You know, I don't even know why. I don't think they would ever. I'm not like a good fit. Don't they? You know who Ben Snakepit is, the cartoonist?
Snakepit.
Yeah, Snakepit.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't. Well, yeah.
Yeah. You don't like his comics?
Not really. I gotta be honest. It's
well, that's the kind of stuff that they publish.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess I can kind of understand why they wouldn't publish Lamo. But he's a good guy though.
I'm sure he's a great guy. It's just I've got one collection I picked up at a comic convention, and it's just each page was like, "This is what I did today."
Yeah.
And it was very formula, and it was like he wasn't engaging what he was doing. He was just kind of listing off.
Yeah, and that's the punk rock way, you know.
Punk rock is just fucking just doing it, not being formulaic, and I think that's what really bugged me. It was like, yeah, I read five of them and they were all the exact same.
Yeah, but it's the punk rock way to piss you off. You know? He's not going to follow your rules.
I must be sounding like a jerk today. I'm just not liking anything.
do you like Sam Henderson?
I love Sam Henderson.
Yes, he's putting together a book of his, you know, all his Nickelodeon comic strips, and I get to do the 2-page introduction to it, a comic introduction. The Sam Henderson Seen But Not Heard.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. I really love Sam Henderson.
Do you go to many comic conventions or get really involved in comic stuff?
No, I've been to probably 3 comic conventions in my life.
Don't like it?
I mean, I can't travel, you know. I have like a really hard time traveling. And so I just write a lot of letters to people, you know. If you're a comic artist and I really like your work, I try and write you a letter, you know.
And maybe
I'd like to, and me and John Porcelino are going to take a road trip to SPX in September.
Oh, that'll be awesome.
And we're going to be stopping, like, along the way at different stores and doing whatever, he's going to be doing signings. I'll probably just tag along.
You'll sit there with a stack of books going, hey.
I don't think anybody really wants anything signed by me, but
I'll have a stack
of Blammos there.
You never know. It's kind of nice because, like, your guys are complete opposites in a way.
Yeah.
John's very, very minimalist, and your stuff is...
And yet we hit it off.
Yeah. How is being around someone like John work for influencing you or kind of...
It's really interesting because we have the same taste in like a lot of stuff. Like me and him will go and hang out just to go walk around to look at buildings. You know, we took this tour a week ago of this historic home. And we like the same music. And even his early... Because I have the King Cat Classics book. And some of his early stuff is pretty hateful, you know, so I could identify with some of that stuff, and I think that's why you can get into Blammo, is because it's kind of a similar, you know, because you know, when you're young, you hate a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the same way, so.
He had his punk rock days.
Yeah, so he doesn't, like, you know, hold my comics against me or anything. I think he probably thinks they're okay.
And who knows, in Blammo 48, it might just be a long issue about your cat.
Yeah. Wait, did you hear about that?
What?
That he's doing an issue of King Cat, like, all about his cat. Have you heard about that yet?
The one that passed away?
Yeah.
Oh. Hey, but he can do that, because that's John, and he does such good...
Me and him are supposed to be painting a mural over here pretty soon.
Really?
Yeah, we're doing a mural together in Denver. It's pretty cool.
What's it for?
It's on the side of this this record store, Wax Tracks, and they asked us to do it. So,
is that
drawing up some stuff?
Is that anything to do with the old record label, Wax Tracks?
Yeah, it's the store that they started originally, and then the guy who started the store. It was like it's from 1978. It's a historic, like, Colorado landmark, and the guy who started it then moved to Chicago and started his label, and they sold it to some other guy who runs it now. He's really nice, but it's really interesting because we'll have events there sometimes. At this record store and the bookstore next to it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were like, don't expect a lot of people to show up. We had Husker Du play here one time and nobody showed up.
Aww. But that had to have been, what, like 25 years ago?
Yeah. I was like, oh, man. So you never know, man. You can have an event. Because, like, we just organized an alternative comic convention that's going on Saturday.
Yeah.
Over here. And I'm, like, praying to God that people show up. Because it'd be really, like, embarrassing if, like, you know, there's, like, two people walking around. Yeah, it'd be sad.
Oh, I'm sure it'll be fine.
Hopefully. We'll see. I'll write you an email and tell you how it was, okay?
All right. Well, you gotta have
a decent...
Care. It's gotta be a decent-sized city, Denver. How many folks are there?
Oh, man. I don't know. I always run into the same people. I don't know. It's like, it's a big, I mean, I guess it's like an okay sized city, but the downtown area is really small, you know, it's only like a few blocks. And then, you know, and it just kind of goes off from there. It's just, and it's weird too, because people are always asking me, like, how are you a comic artist in Denver, you know? Like, shouldn't you be in, like, Chicago or, like, New York or something?
I don't think it matters where you live anymore.
I don't think it matters either.
In fact, it's better to live somewhere like that. Don't a bunch of guys live in, like, Minneapolis?
Yeah.
I know, like,
they're sprouting up all over the place. Yeah. Like, I'd like to live in Seattle. That'd be nice, right?
It's expensive.
I've never been there yet.
It's got some talented folks. Some of them have moved up to Vancouver because, you know, Vancouver's nicer.
Not I want to check out Montreal really bad.
I only went once when I was a kid. I went to Toronto and that was really nice.
I saw that movie Away We Go. Did you see that?
No.
They have this whole scene where they go to Montreal. It looks really nice. Like, man, I'm going to live there. Maybe I will.
One day.
Me and you, we'll move in together, okay?
All right.
We'll
start a poutine and hot dog stand.
Yes, there we go. That's how we'll live.
Have you had poutine?
No, I don't know what it is. Tell me.
It's Canadian cuisine. Basically, what you have is you have, like, a bunch of french fries, like a bowl of nice piping hot french fries. You put some cheese curds on top of that. And then you pour a bunch of gravy on top of that.
Wow.
Does that sound amazing?
Yeah, it sounds good. I'm a cartoonist, so I just live on my fingernail clippings. That's all I get to eat.
So you got to get scurvy at some point.
Eventually, I'm waiting. I might already have it. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm too afraid to look at the side effects, you know?
Well, if your kidney shut down, let me know.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll find out. I'm sure they'll talk about it in the news up in Vancouver.
There we go. Cartoonist tragically scurvied.
Before his time.
There we go. So what do you got coming out in the future? You got the new MOM, which should be out soon in stores.
Yeah, Comics Journal, all the time.
All the time?
I have my graphic novel, The Hypo, Abe Lincoln Story. And then I have this Sam Henderson thing. And then, that's about all you can see.
That's all I'm allowed to see.
Yeah.
Now you do some online stuff for Wizard too, don't you?
Oh yeah, I do. Yeah, I do.
I didn't read any in bed, but
I do recaps for the Flash Rebirth comic. Where, like, I break down each issue into four panels, and that'll tell you everything that happened in that issue. And I just started, like, I made up my own alphabet that I've been using to put secret messages on, you know, below the comic strip now.
All right. And,
yeah.
One day cool. You'll publish a code?
My own code. I don't know.
Do you like the Flash?
It's all right. I don't know. I like that Green Lantern storyline better than the Flash.
I haven't read it.
I mean, it's okay, you know. Flash. Well, have you read it yet, or what? Do you read that stuff?
I read the Grant Morrison stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty bad as far as the other DC stuff. And I am, by roots, a DC kid. I didn't grow up with X-Men. I grew up with Batman.
Yeah, I like DC more than Marvel. I can't get into Marvel stuff, really.
Yeah, the Marvel stuff, it's all, I don't know, all Stan Lee-ified, maybe.
The X-Men movies, did you like those?
I like the first two, same as everyone else.
But do you think that, yeah, I know, right? Do you think that DC makes better movies than Marvel?
You know, I would like to say that, but we all know about Catwoman.
Oh, man.
See, there we go.
Yeah.
I'd hate to end on that.
What about the Hulk? Did you see the new Hulk movie?
Yes.
With Edward Norton?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought it was really great. I really liked it a lot.
Yeah, I was trying to remember if I watched it, and I think I watched it at work, which was a good way to spend time that I should be doing other stuff.
Yeah.
Thank you, work, for renting Hulk. But I got to be honest, I'm not a fan of comics being adapted to movies. I think I'm kind of sick of the non-original, but maybe that's just movies. I don't know. I don't get hung up on what would make the next great movie or whatever.
Yeah. It's just kind of a fad, isn't it, you think?
It is, and I think hopefully Watchmen was the nail in the coffin for it.
Man, people hated that movie.
I haven't even watched it.
I haven't talked to anybody who liked that movie.
You know, it's a movie done by the guy that did 300, which was, you know, big old Americana neocon, we hate the Iranians movie. Make them all look like, I don't know, very gay, pierced men.
Well, what do you in Canada? What do you guys think of Americans? I mean, do you guys like really even like do you consider yourself sort of American?
No, we're definitely a different country. I mean, we acknowledge the absorption of culture from America, but yeah. I mean, it's different now than it was under W.
Yeah,
but I mean, there was certain like at least we're not American. Sorry, Americans listening. And maybe I'm not a good example. Maybe I'm just...
I always wonder that kind of stuff. You know, I don't know what's going on. You guys probably have a pretty nice country up there. I'm going to go check it out.
You should come up, check it out, have some poutine.
You guys have Julie Ducey?
We do. She's in Montreal as well.
Yeah, I'm going to go hang out with her.
You should. Maybe she'll teach you.
Well, you got Chester Brown and Seth, right?
Yep, they're in Ontario, and I think Chester Brown is one of our national treasures.
Yeah, he's great. The Louis Riel book?
Riel? Yeah.
That one right there, like, I want to do something like that with that Abe Lincoln book, you know? That'd be cool if I got it to look something like that, cause that's a great book, man.
Well,
And that's another thing, too, is, like, I'd never even heard of that character, you know, that guy at all. I didn't know who he was.
Oh, he's really important up here. It's something we all learn in school because, I mean, it's one of those kind of folk heroes where it's like he did some really good things, he did some bad things, you know. Was he good? Was he bad? I mean, maybe that's part of the whole Canadian identity is we don't have this discernible right and wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, he did some stuff that he needed to do for his community he was with or that he wanted to support. And that kind of looks at the challenges of that.
But isn't that interesting that, like, in America, they just don't even bother teaching you that kind of stuff? Like, you wouldn't even, unless you seek that out, like, you wouldn't even know.
Well, I think, I mean, you know, it's, you probably don't learn about many other countries at all. You probably learn about America.
Yeah, I mean, I can't even, you know, I heard in other countries, you know, like, I guess in Canada, too, you guys, you know, you speak French, too, right?
I don't.
You?
In Quebec, mainly, and a fair amount in Ontario, but like closer to Quebec. But yeah, it's not a expected thing that I would be parlez-vous français, you know.
Yeah.
I don't. Je ne pas parlez-vous français.
Well, like, yeah, like in America, they don't really bother. You know, like, I guess now people are mostly trying to learn Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so many Mexicans that are coming over, you know. But that's about it. I mean, I don't know anybody really that can speak, like, any other language. It's pretty funny. It's pretty interesting.
Well, you know, it's the whole American centralism concept of it being kind of the center of its own world. But it's changing. It's changing. I think I'm going to bring us to an end, Noah.
What's that?
I'm going to bring us to an end here.
How dare you?
I'm going to stop our conversation and end with the Brian Jonestown. Thank you so much for chatting with me today.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
It was good talking. And yeah. I'll send you a poutine recipe.
Great.
Seriously, right, you got to try it. Thank you so much.
All right, bye.
Bye. And that was Noah Van Sciver, and after this song break, we will be on with T. Edward Bach. So please stay tuned. CITR 101.9 FM, Inkstuds.